everybody. Welcome to the Good Evening Kitties podcast, a Tales from the Crypt review. My name is Melissa, your ghostess with the mostess, and today's episode is Season 3, Episode 7, The Reluctant Vampire. Today I have a special guest, return guest.
I'm back.
Mike is back with me again to talk about this episode, about the vampires and all of that. It's a fun episode. Of course, we love Malcolm McDowell in it as the sweet little vampire who is reluctant.
I don't know, not really what he's used to playing, I guess. Eh. Or what we know him for playing. I mean, he's probably got all sorts of other roles that are maybe more nuanced.
It's definitely more of a, like, a restricted kind of role. Like, he's less, like, he's more subdued.
Yeah, but he still gets to, you know, act crazy in a way.
So let's get into it here again. It's Season 3, Episode 7, The Reluctant Vampire. As always, John Kassir is the voice of the Crypt Keeper, and Danny Elfman does the theme song. This episode aired July 10th, 1991. It was directed by Elliot Silverstein, who also directed three other future Tales from the Crypt episodes that we haven't got to yet.
Oh my god!
The screenplay is by Terry Black. It stars, like we said, Malcolm McDowell, who you would know from many things, including The Clockwork Orange. It also has Sandra Dickinson, who does voices for TV's The Amazing World of Gumball, which I've watched that show.
Interesting connection.
Yep. George Wendt, as you would know from TV's Cheers, Paul Gleason, who's also who was in the movie The Breakfast Club, and Michael Berryman, who was also in The Hills Have Eyes. Yay, Michael Berryman. So I'm going to go ahead here and read the back of the episode. Hey, it's Eleven. Meet the vampire who works as a night security guard at a blood bank. I like that they keep this one kind of vague, and some of them just are way too descriptive in there. This one opens up on the Crypt Keeper, and he is dressed up as a vampire. He's got a real high cape, and he's practicing how to be a vampire. He's reading a book. It's called Vampirism Made Easy.
I mean, what is the Crypt Keeper? He's obviously deceased.
Well, he was born deceased.
He was born deceased. So, I mean, like, a mortal can become a vampire, technically, but he's even in a position where he can't do this. So this is role-playing in a way, and I kind of feel sorry for him.
It's very cute, though. He's got a really nice, typical, stereotypical vampire cape, and he's reading a book about learning how to be... He says he wants to continue his deducation and learn how to be a vampire.
I want to suck your blood. That's not right. I want to suck your blood. No, that's not it. I want to suck... Hello, kitties. You caught me in the middle of my homework.
So he opens up the episode, and in the background there's a coffin, too, in his crypt. It's, I don't know, they always add a lot of fun stuff. It starts out, you're kind of like in this room. It's dark, and there's just like one little lit candle, which I guess he just leaves the whole time. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's in like a basement type thing. There's some
pictures. It feels a bit like what we do in the shadows.
Yeah,
but to be
little.
Fair, a lot of vampire movies where the vampire will have whatever room he's in, it's like an ancestral crypt, even if it's like an apartment, he's made it up to look like that.
Yeah.
With portraits of, you know, ex-family members and nobility
But what's funny about the portraits is it's like it's nobility, but then it almost looks like they just drew the little vampire teeth on the nice picture, so you're like...
It's schlocky, but hey, it's
still
from the
crypt.
But it's
real dusty and dark, and a little rat runs by, which you will meet, you'll learn about him later. And so, well, actually, I'll talk about him now. His name is Leopold, and Leopold is the vampire.
I just realized, is that an Iron Maiden in the background?
Probably, yeah. But this whole thing is, this whole thing's covered, like, with cobwebs, and there's, like, a coffin that's laying on the ground, and next to it is a little candle that's lit, as well as a bowl with some human, like...
Dentures.
Some dentures, but they're for human teeth.
Yeah.
So instead of, like, putting in your fake fangs or something, he puts in human teeth so that he can blend in. Now, he does have the problem where, like, the fangs can still go over the dentures, but at least it covers them for the most part so you can't just normally see them. So, again, like I said, he has a little pet rat named Leopold, who is very cute. And so there's an alarm clock that goes off next to his coffin, and he's all grumpy, and he grabs his little dentures that are sitting in the water, and he puts his teeth in, and he says, I hate Mondays.
Oh, God. I mean, I love this episode, but it really does have some moments that just make you...
It's so cute.
I guess it's part of the draw, right? It's part of the kitsch.
So he opens up his coffin, and he's up, and he's all groggy. and he's getting up for his night shift at the blood bank. So he's been sleeping all day.
It almost plays it off like he's hungover.
Yeah, kind of. Like, he just had a really rough night and just did not sleep well. Which, really, if you're sleeping in a box, I don't know how comfy... I guess it's lined with stuff.
I mean, if you've done it for, like, 500 years, though, I mean...
It really depends, though, because some of this vampire lore, you use the dirt of the country you're from or whatever.
It's all vampire lore... is all based upon... It's different from country to country to begin with.
Yeah.
And Dracula set up so many tropes that could be easily, you know, overturned anyway. If you try to... If everything tries to remain the same, you're going to drive yourself insane. It all doesn't make sense in the end, so just, you know, hand wave it.
What I like about this, too, is he's to save space in his little basement abode that he has here, he has, like, a Murphy bed-style coffin, so he can pull this rope and bring the coffin back up, and it kind of hides for the day, which... does keep him protected in a way, but also, yeah, opens up a little living room for him.
Very, very modern vampire, you know, with the Iron Maiden in his room and everything.
Yeah, so he puts up his Murphy bed coffin and he ties that and he grumbles his way on. He calls for Leopold and turns on the radio while he's getting ready, and he can kind of light candles with his fingers, which I thought was kind of fun.
He's got magic.
Yeah, so it's pretty fun. He's getting his blood out of the fridge and taking a nice swig. He's got Leopold on his shoulder, which is very cute. And on the radio, he can hear that someone...
has been hunting vampires recently.
Yes, someone is a vampire hunter, he claims. Rupert Van Helsing. So he is obviously from the descendant of the Van Helsings. But he's played by Michael Berryman, which we'll meet later.
Does that mean that Van Helsing fucked?
Why not?
My childhood is ruined.
Why wouldn't he? I mean, all that fighting, you just, like, get worked up, right?
I guess.
After you stab the vampire with a stake, you're like, I want to stab something else. I don't know. Anyway, so Malcolm McDowell's character is named Mr. Longtooth, which I thought was kind of fun.
Yeah.
So Mr. Longtooth, like I said, is getting ready for his security guard job at the blood bank. He's got his uniform on.
He's the night watch.
Yeah, he's the night watch. He's got his uniform on. He's getting ready. It's a very convenient position. He's been there for a couple of years. You know, this is how he can kind of swipe his blood. And he's still listening to the radio and hearing about Mr. Van Helsing talking about that there really are vampires. And I do, you know, I take them out and stuff like that.
It's interesting because over the radio, this descendant, the scion of the Van Helsing clan, talks about the vampire's attraction to blood almost being like an addiction, like it's a mental problem that they have, almost.
Yeah, like a compulsion
thing. It's weird.
Now, while most of us make a point of not looking for trouble, my next guest has made a career of it. He has a job that's definitely not for the squeamish. For the past 50 years, Rupert Van Helsing has been hunting vampires. Hunting vampires? Mr. Van Helsing, is that for real?
Of course it's for real, Miss Jones. I assure you, vampires are quite real.
And they really turn into bats and fly around?
No, that's just in the movies. But they must drink blood to stay alive. And it must be human blood. It is for them an addiction for which they have to kill nightly.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm wearing an extra scarf to bed tonight.
Hilarious.
This part's kind of funny, too, because he has one of those old-school lunchboxes, but it's kind of built a little differently. Like, it's the black metal thing with, like, you can flip the top up.
Yeah.
But it's kind of built a little special. Like, he can keep some blood stuff in there. He's got, like, different... I'll get into it a little bit, but he's got some stuff in there. But then he also puts Leopold in there, too, which... It's kind of funny because as he's walking to work, he's kind of just swinging that lunchbox back and forth. I'm like, poor little Leopold.
The rat's got multiple broken bones.
I mean, it's not super bad, but Leopold's definitely getting shaken around a little bit in there, but I guess maybe that's what he likes. I don't know.
It could be that they just didn't think of it.
Yeah. So he's at the Sunnyside Memorial Blood Bank. And here, the boss, played by George Wendt, is going off about how the blood supply is really low. And they've had a couple cases of blood that they can't find, and they're not getting enough donations, and there's irregularities in the bookkeeping. And he's explaining this to Sally, who, I love Sally, and I will get into that in a little bit, too.
Sally's a charmer.
Yes. Everyone else is kind of leaving for the day, it looks like, because, you know, it's the night shift. But Sally's there, and she's a really, like soft-spoken, quiet little person who, I guess, is like a secretary or does something there. And she's just very concerned because...
A little bit of a Betty Boop voice going on.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, she's almost played as kind of dumb, but, like, also kind of like...
I don't know if they played her as dumb. She came off as more just,
maybe just
know,
mousy.
The word
I
is.
Guess
just
mousy
is the perfect word for this, actually.
She's just kind of mousy, and George Wendt's character, again, the boss, he's very mad because they can't...
He's a dick.
Yeah, they can't go for the... They can't find out where all the blood went. So I guess either Mr. Longtooth's getting sloppy or something got messed up. They're going to have to shut down the blood bank if they don't get enough donations. Mm-hmm. Sally is, you know, she really needs this job. She's been here for like probably, I think it's like at least 3 to 5 years. And she needs this job. And so, of course, you know, being the scumbag that they got to have in Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, yeah. Classic scum.
The boss starts hitting on her, saying, you know.
Saying, like, well, you know, I don't know about other people's jobs, but, you know, maybe you and me could work something out, if you know what I mean.
He's like, I really like you, Sally. We could get to the bottom of that, of me liking you. And she's just like, no, thank you. And while she's, you know, she can stand up for herself, and she's like, no, thanks. Mr. Longtooth also jumps in, and he's like, hey, you know, what are you doing? And so, of course, the boss is, like, kind of mad at him for stepping in, and immediately, what's funny is, like, Mr. Longtooth is immediately, like, rough, and then as soon as he gets shot down, he just takes his hat off, and he's like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry.
I need this job, too.
I forgot I'm the reluctant vampire. And, you know, he's just kind of like, oh, crap.
Maybe they could work something out together between the two of them.
Oh, my. And so Sally's on her way out, and you can tell that there's a little bit of a flirtation between her and Mr. Longtooth. She's like, he's like, don't worry, we'll have, you know, I'm sure we'll get to keep our jobs and stuff. And then she thanks him for standing up for her, and...
Thanks for standing up for me today, Mr. Longtooth.
It was nothing.
No, I mean it. It was a brave thing to do.
Nobody's ever called me that before.
What?
Brave. When my family used to go out hunting, I used to stay in the house. I couldn't kill anyone. Anything, because...
Oh, that doesn't mean you're a coward. You're sensitive, that's all.
I am?
Yeah. And I think sensitive is sexy.
And she's, you know, complimenting and saying, in a way, you know, she kind of has feelings for him, like a little bit. And so here's where it makes me laugh, because he immediately has to turn around because his fangs are, he's starting to get excited. So his fangs are coming out. And I'm like, did he just get a fang erection?
Yeah, it's a mouth boner.
That's pretty much what he just got, a mouth boner around Sally. I was like, all right.
I mean, you could do a whole reading into the whole vampire, like, myth making like that, as in it's just,
well, yeah.
This is just metaphors for sexuality. I mean, yeah. Dracula's pretty much nothing but that. But
it's just funny because he immediately has to turn away, and she's kind of like, oh, maybe I said the wrong thing and I shouldn't have said anything. And she's like, are you okay? And he's like, oh, no, I just have this toothache. And he's like covering his mouth while he talks to her, and probably like, go down, fangs, go down. She's kind of disappointed, because she was even saying, I could stick around a little longer and hang out with you on your shift. And he's just like, nah, that's all right. I'm just going to do my stuff, and I'll see you in the morning. And she's like, okay. I love her, though, because she may be, like, mousy, but she also knows what she wants. And
yeah.
she takes it later. Well, I mean, we'll get to that.
No, just spoilers.
I can't help it. I love Sally. So she leaves, and immediately he's like, okay.
These whole episodes are nothing but spoilers, though.
Yeah. Immediately he's like, yay, blood bank! And he goes in and he opens up the door.
The little dance.
Yeah, he opens up the door to the, there's just tons of, like, not tons, but there's a lot of bags of blood, because they are getting low. So really he needs to watch himself. He's tossing bags of blood around, he's picking the best ones he likes, you know. And
now we know why they're getting under this, because he's grabbing, like, five different bags.
He's taking quite
right
a bit.
Right off of there. And he's mixing them all up.
And I would say they look kind of light. I would say it's more like tomato juice they're using for it.
Maybe.
Some blood, or at least like, I don't
something
know.
Something like that.
Is like darker. But he's got different kinds of blood. I think some of it he takes home too for like a snack. So if he's going through 4 or 5 bags a night.
Yeah.
And not making sure to write everything down. He's basically destroying everyone's jobs. I think it's just taken a couple years to get to that. Maybe they had a whole lot by in the beginning.
Who knows?
Really, I would have waited a little longer till I knew Sally was gone. She doesn't come back, but I'm just saying, like, it's as soon as she left, he's just like, woo, you know.
Try not to think too hard about some of the logic.
I can't help it.
You know, it's, you disappoint yourself.
Eh. So this is where it's cute, though. He opens up the little lunchbox, and he's got stuff to make a martini, or a bloodtini.
He's got a shaker, but...
And he's got a little martini glass.
But he doesn't have any ice. It's the whole point of a shaker.
It's already been in the fridge.
Is that you
it's
put...
cold.
I just don't get it.
Try not to think too much about it, Mike. So that's where Leopold is sitting nestled between some salt and a martini shaker and a napkin because he's fancy. And he's got a martini glass and he mixes the different types of blood. Like, you know, I got a little AB and a little type O and putting a little all of it in there. And he puts a twist of lime in it again because he's fancy. And he shakes it. He shakes, there's no ice, but he shakes the bloods somehow together and pours it into a little martini glass. I believe he adds an olive though, doesn't he?
Let me see here.
No olive. But Leopold's on his shoulder, and I love rats. He's so cute. It's a great name for a rat, too. And he drinks the drink, and he's like, oh, yeah. And then he burps, because he's not fancy. He says they need to go alter the record book, and I guess, I don't know if he's just been getting sloppy, or they're just not getting enough donations.
Well, it's like, after he drinks it, though, he's clearly acting drunk. He just swivels around. He's like, it's time to change the record.
Yeah, he's kind of getting kind of sloppy, and he just leaves the bags of blood out there. He's just like, woo! Like, because he has the whole night to himself, you know?
I mean, not only is the vampire a metaphor for sexuality, he is also a metaphor for alcoholism.
I mean, for a vampire, it's a pretty sweet gig. And luckily, there are no security cameras. So it's not like he has to worry about that or anything. No one can see what he's doing. It's all based on these paper books that he can fill out. And when he goes to check on the books, he finds that they're gone. The boss guy has taken them. He's very angry about that, that he's taken them. He knows, I think his name's Mr. Crosswhite or something.
Something like that.
And so he's like, dang it. So, you know, I got to figure out how to replace this blood. And now a thing about Mr. Longtooth, he doesn't like to kill people for blood. So he's like, I got to get some more blood. I guess I got to make myself kill someone. And it's, you know, kind of crappy part of town. And there's this cool old lady who's walking her little poodle.
Great. I love this scene.
This poodle whose name is Cuddles. It's real smoky. And like I said, there's graffiti. So you know it's like, it's going to be bad.
Yeah, it's 1980s, early 90s. Are they in New York City? It feels like
it. Yeah, probably.
It feels like the fictional account of hellhole New York. Whatever they thought New York was like back then.
And so it's kind of shot to where there's like a corner. So you have the woman and her, the old lady and her dog coming one way. And then you have Longtooth coming the other way. And he's kind of, she can't see him. So he's kind of sitting there talking to himself.
Yeah, he's hiding around the corner of the shadows waiting for her.
He's kind of like, I need to do this. I need to kill this woman. And the woman's mad at her dog. She's like, I wish you could have held it till the morning. This is terrifying out here. I don't like being out here. Hurry up and pee. And even the dog's like looking around like, I know someone's over there. And he can't bring himself to do it.
Nah.
And so this bad guy shows up.
I like how you say just bad guy. The bad guy.
Okay, so this guy shows up, and he's bad. Mugger. He's this mugger, and he immediately, like, I don't even know if he really had a gun. I think he just put his finger in his shirt. No, okay, he has a crowbar.
Yeah.
So he comes up to the lady, and this is the best. He comes up to the lady and kind of touches her with the crowbar, and is like, hey, Granny, give me your purse. And she immediately kicks him in the junk.
Fucking great. And she's, I love it.
It's great. And the dog's like, ah! And, you know, but she's immediately like, fuck that. Like, she's like, she can take care of herself.
Okay, Granny. Hand over your purse.
I said, hand over! Oh! Her body isn't safe to walk the streets anymore.
She's more kind of miffed at the whole thing. Yeah, like, she's not just, even afraid.
She's just like, shame on you. This is why I can't even take my dog out to go pee.
Not even fazed by it.
And I was like, yeah, lady, that's right. And so she immediately takes off with the dog. And so from the side, Longtooth grabs this thief, or this mugger.
Now this guy, on the other hand, no problem with that. I love the interrogation though.
Yeah.
It's like saying, have you taken any drugs, any medications? Do you have any bloodborne diseases? which when you think about it, I've often thought about that actually. It's very rare in any kind of vampire piece of fiction to where the vampires actually give a crap about, you know, the manner of blood that they're actually drinking.
Who the hell are you?
Hello. Have you ever had any bloodborne diseases?
No, man.
Are you currently taking any drugs or any other medication? Have you had dental surgery in the last 72 hours?
I guess the assumption would be that, well, if you're an immortal blood-sucking being beyond all sorts of physical laws of nature, that you wouldn't have to worry about AIDS.
The most I've ever heard of is, like, they don't usually drink dead blood. Like, if it's a dead animal or something, you don't drink it because it's, like, bad or something. But no, the best here, yeah, he's holding up the guy right before he bites him. Because this guy's a bad guy, so it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like, you know, have you ever taken any meds? And he's just like, what? What are you talking about? Because he's choking this guy out the whole time he's asking the questions just to make sure he's safe. And so this part's a little gross.
I love it.
Because he's not just going to, like, completely drink the guy. He bites him. Like, he bites, like, one little tooth in or kind of, like, stabs him with this needle.
He's got a racking tube and a 5-gallon carboy. And
yeah.
I was just thinking of home brewing the whole time I'm seeing this.
Ew.
Because of the equipment involved.
Yeah, because he stabs this needle with this, I guess, I mean, he got the stuff from the clinic. And he's got it in this guy's neck, in his carotid artery. That's the carotid, right?
I don't know. I'm not
Yeah, that's the carotid.
I'm not a doctor.
And, you know, he's killed this guy, so he's basically draining him of his blood, which is, like, ew. But he's putting it in this 5-gallon carboy.
It's awesome. He's holding the guy and squeezing his chest.
He's just, like, right there on the corner still. He hasn't even taken him anywhere special. He's just...
That is kind of risky.
But what's the best is, like, he wants to get it all out, so he really should have, like, held the guy upside down or something, but he's sitting here, like, squeezing the guy, like, giving him the Heimlich so he can push all the blood
it's
out.
It's the comedic value. Like, yeah. You have to see the scene to believe it. It's fun.
And it doesn't get close to filling up the carboy, so he's got a lot of people he's got to get around to doing. Yeah, he's jumping on the body, everything he can to get this blood out. It's a lot of work.
Imagine turning the corner and running into that late at night. I'm just like, I didn't see anything.
So he filled up
officer, because he's dressed like a night guard.
Yeah,
so.
He's filled up about a quarter of the carboy, and so he goes back and he starts filling the blood bags, which this bothers me because it's like, you don't know what this guy's blood type is. You don't know what if he had been tested, and now you're giving it to people who are innocent who are going to get blood transfusions.
Yeah.
What I was hoping he was going to do, like in the very beginning before I remember this episode, what I was hoping he was going to do is go do that and make his own blood bags and then just keep them. Why don't he just do that for himself?
There's a bit of fridge horror in this episode just because you don't know if he's basically putting infected blood in every one of these things. Because
technically, if he didn't want them to get onto him, why wouldn't he just go kill bad guys and make the blood bags for himself and then just eat them himself?
Well, or drink them himself? That would be too simple.
Then you don't even have to worry about the... I guess because maybe the other blood's really good. I don't know. So he's sitting here like... Using, what's that called? Do you use it with the homebrew?
Siphon.
A siphon tube
and tubing.
Yeah, and he's siphoning the blood into the little bags.
To avoid oxygenation, I suppose.
I guess, and hanging them back up because he can't fiddle with the books because it's not there. So he's like, well, I gotta refill all these bags. Hopefully it's whatever blood it is. So he's finishing up putting the blood, like just about the end of it, and the lights come on in the lobby, and Sally has come in early because... She's just so worried about losing her job and I guess wanted to check on him and stuff like that. And so he kind of has to, like, throw everything together, you know, and hanging out in the fridge and with the blood. And really, that looks a little suspicious, kind of.
Very suspicious, actually. Why as a night guard
would he even be in there?
Fiddling around in there and not just, you know, sitting at a desk or, you know, standing somewhere?
Yeah,
you know?
Or, like, why would he even be in there? He wouldn't even need to be. And so he's like, oh, hey, Sally, and just, like, shuts the door. And again, she's still kind of coming on to him. She's kind of stepping up a little more with this now because she's kind of like, don't you find me attractive? He's like, no, I like you. And so then she hugs him and he's holding her. And then again, he gets a little mouth boner again.
Yes.
And he's just like so in love. But then he's like immediately like, oh, crap. So he pushes her away and is just like, okay, I got to go. The toothache. Oh. And this is where it brings in Michael Berryman as Rupert Van Helsing.
Getting a real big Judge Doom kind of Roger Rabbit vibe off of this guy.
Yeah, he's doing it really good. Because, I mean, if you don't know what Michael Berryman looks like, go look him up. He's played many characters. He's very good at it.
He's a distinctive-looking gentleman.
Yes. And so he's at the police office. He's at the police office.
Yeah. And the precinct.
And the cops are like, oh my gosh, we found this guy who was drained of all his blood, and this is so weird, he got all these pictures. And so that's why Van Helsing's there, Rupert Van Helsing. He's like, perhaps I can help you.
He just barges, walks all the way through the office into like the back office where the detectives are talking about the case. Somehow gets back there.
Yeah.
We're not gonna... Overly suspicious looking fellow with giant Coke bottle glasses.
Yeah, he looks awesome.
Reminds me of Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys a little bit too.
Yeah,
actually.
I guess a little bit.
If Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys and Judge Doom were combined into one character.
Yeah,
that's
except,
what this
except
would be.
Michael Berryman's very tall. But he's got a nice suit on and a hat and yeah, like the Coke bottle-y kite glasses and he's just like...
Who the hell are you?
Rupert Von Helsing.
Well, what do you want, Rupert?
I want to help you, Lieutenant. Though at first you're not going to believe anything I tell you. You're going to think I'm strange. Bizarre. But in 3 to 4 days, when the city is awash in blood, you're going to beg me for my help.
I think you may have a vampire. And they're like, well, I mean, for one, there's only one hole here. Shouldn't there be two? And he's just like, still kind of suspicious, like...
I am wise to the ways of the vampire.
And so the cops there are like, all right, we don't really believe you, but thank you. You know, and he starts bringing out these other pictures that are kind of showing similar bite marks, but again, are two holes and not one. And so they're not really, you know, and it's vampires. Like, you're going to
be
like,
it could
be
just
you know.
Body art for all they know.
Yeah. And so they go over the, he goes with the police, Van Helsing goes to the police, and they see the bodies, and he drained a whole 9 pints out of that body, and...
What's funny is they actually leave this guy with the body, though.
Yeah, which is kind of weird.
I mean, strange man comes in, starts talking about vampires, and you're gonna leave him with the dead body.
I just love his face, like, as they're leaving, and he's thinking, because he's still like, I still know it's a vampire, and he's just got this little smug face, and those Coke bottle glasses are just like, So now Mr. Longtooth might have a problem. Looks like Van Helsing is after him, or at least looking for some sort of vampire. So it cuts to, I guess, like a couple days later, and it's at the bank, and George Wendt, the boss there, who's playing the boss, is saying that he has bad news.
I'm afraid I have some bad news. Due to the problems we've been having in maintaining our blood supply, I've decided to scale back. Now, what this means is most of you will no longer be with us at the end of the month. Sorry. I know how you all must feel, but for us to continue current operations, there would have to be a stunning improvement in our business. I'm talking at least twice our current daily intake. Good night, everyone. We'll see you all in the morning.
So he's like, I'm sorry. You know, everyone's like, oh, I got, you know, it's just like lots of murmurs like, oh, we're going to lose our job. I mean, at least I gave him some time. I don't know where in the month it is.
I mean,
but...
I hate to take this dick's side, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it was like, and everybody go home.
I have worked at places like that.
Yeah, so I mean, he told them, and he told them at night too, so like at least they don't have to go the whole day going, oh my God, you know, they got like night to kind of think about it and figure out what they want to do. Like, they could easily get rid of the night security guard. If they don't even have a lot of blood around, why would they need a night security guard? But what the boss is basically saying is they need to like double their production.
And you're always going to have security of one kind or another, though, no matter what you do.
I guess, but I mean, you could still probably just buy a camera or something and just...
Well, this is what, 1991?
Yeah.
How prevalent was that? That's a good question.
If anyone knows about security cameras from 1991, send me an email at goodeveningpod@gmail.com.
I'm pretty sure it would have been prevalent at most, like...
Did you work at a job in 1991 that had a camera? Tell me about it. Sally runs over to the boss and is like, please don't do this. I need my job. And he's just like,
we all need our jobs. You see, she's worried about everybody. But he's just like, I don't know about the others, but maybe you and me could work something out,
yeah,
baby.
Again.
And like, the look of just, you know, sick lust in his eyes as he says these lines and he folds his hands and he just leans into her. It's just, ugh.
Yeah. He immediately looks down and she looks at her chest like, don't you freaking look at my chest.
Yeah, it's like, get away from me, bad man.
She grabs her bag and she runs. She's upset. She's going to lose her job. Even the boss is telling Even the boss is telling Mr. Longtooth.
Dr. Longtooth.
Telling him that, yeah, that it's gonna, you know, they could easily get rid of the security guard. And so later at his job, because, you know, he is the Nightman, he's hanging out there talking to Leopold. He's spent hundreds of years sucking blood, he says to Leopold. And he found this great job here at this blood bank.
It really is good.
It is.
Although, to be fair, like, in our modern era... I know modern is just another word for the era we're living in, but nowadays, what with how many, you know, places require overnight work, like, this age is kind of a golden age for vampirism, because they could often keep, you know, at least a part-time job or a full-time job working overnights and be able to sustain themselves that way.
You don't want to work the full night, though, because you got to hunt. So if you had, like, a part-time night job...
But you need a place to stay, though. You need to pay rent... Unless you're going to live out in the woods and be a feral vampire or something.
Yeah. Because he's talking to Leopold like, man, this is such a sweet gig. I don't want to go back to stalking people anymore. And he goes, I don't want to end up sucking on the streets again. And I was like, oh.
Girlfriend, been there.
Mm-hmm. Same.
My whole life, Leo has been killing, more killing. Hundreds of years of sucking blood. Until, of course, I... got a job in this mob's place. I know, Leo, I know. I am what I am. I just don't want to go back to the stalking life. I don't want to end up sucking on the streets again.
Sucking on those mean streets,
oh,
just
gosh.
Getting all up in that.
I was like, that's...
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to say that sentence, but I guess it works.
I'm pretty sure that he was aware of what he was saying. This is Malcolm McDowell having fun with this role.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I like him in this role. I like his voice. It's very sweet. And then he's talking to Leopold, and he gets the idea, like, what if I just start taking out bad guys and become, like, this vigilante vampire? He basically wanted to take out all the bad guys and fill up the carboy full of blood and replace the blood into the bags and then just say that they got a bunch of donations. how this would work, it wouldn't. For one, no one's coming in to donate in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's another thing to where you really can't think too hard about it.
It really doesn't make sense. Or at least it's not going to fool anybody. And there's also, like, no paperwork for blood donations. It's a lot of paperwork. Or at least a lot of testing and things like that. So he's just like, hey, I got this. And it just shows him, like, in a montage of...
filling up that carboy.
Filling up the carboy, taking out bad guys, filling up the carboy, just keeping himself busy. Now it kind of looks like Kool-Aid that he's putting in there.
It's a little translucent. It's a very, very clear looking for blood.
So it's been some time. I don't think it's been too long, but the papers are definitely noticing a lot of left, because he just, like, leaves the body there, you know? So they're finding all these, like,
all these dead
bloodless bodies. And so now Helsing is back at the precinct, like, you have a vampire. So he found, I don't know if I caught this first time.
I forgot this completely, actually.
Yeah, this is how Van Helsing kind of figures out where the vampire might be.
A Carpathian landfill, apparently.
Yeah, there was a Carpathian landfill in Transylvania that had a order for 100 square feet of loam to line the coffin, and Transylvanian soil is essential to the survival of vampire. I've heard that it's just wherever their native... it doesn't necessarily have to be Transylvania.
And you would be correct, but whatever.
But he's saying, I have this receipt... In the bill of this receipt, they have the address. So he's like, I'm gonna go check out that, which is a good clue. I mean, 100 square feet of soil from Transylvania, that's a kind of specific order, you know? So he's like, let's go to this address. I wanna see where it was delivered and why. I promise you, if you come with me, cop, we can go hide out in wherever this address is and show up here and figure out what's going on. I promise you, you won't be disappointed. So the cop's like, you know what? I've been up for like 14 hours shift going through all these bloodless bodies. He's like, fine, whatever.
Might as well at this point.
He's like, if you will leave me alone, I will.
It's just like that stereotypical scene from so many different crime genres. The besieged police detective who's just at his desk, papers scattered everywhere.
Yeah.
Of course, he's got to hold his head and his hair is all disheveled.
His tie's like all askew.
And it's like, oh yeah, the tie's undone.
He's had a long day.
He's got like several cups of coffee lying around.
So Mr. Longtooth comes back and starts lighting all the candles with his fingers.
It's a nice trick.
Yeah, I like it. And comes back to his place, and he's in a pretty good mood. He feels like he really thought of something that's going to save the bank and save Sally's job, and no one's going to find out, because I don't know why he thinks that. He is getting ready to... Yeah, there is a Iron Maiden.
It just looks so out of place. Like, I get candles, I get stuff like that, but like, what's the... I mean, an Iron Maiden, I guess, is a quick way to drain blood. Maybe it's got a little to... like a little
opening. Maybe it's just like something he found a long time ago that, you know, it's just like a family heirloom.
This Iron Maiden from the 30 Years' War is a great heirloom of our family, yes.
And so, as he's starting to unhook the rope to bring down his coffin, he hears a voice. And out comes the boss, Mr. Crosswhite, and he's got a gun. And so he's on to him. He knows something's up. Mr. Longtooth is like, how did you get in here?
And I guess we've been a little unfair, though, with talking about the logistics behind bookkeeping and keeping track of the blood supplies. But if the director of this blood bank is himself knows what's going on, then that explains quite a lot as to why they are able to do and get away with it for so long.
Yeah, so basically, I think a lot of this stuff wasn't tricking Mr. Crosswhite. He's been on to him for a while that something's been up. I think it's funny how he's just like, I'm on to you as a vampire. It's fine.
It's fine. Well, we don't know Crosswhite's, you know, history. You know, maybe he was, like, mocked by leprechauns as a child. Maybe he's down with the whole supernatural.
And Mr. Crosswhite's like, thank you for doubling the blood donation. I want to get in on this. But also, I've been on to you for a while. We never were going bankrupt. That was fake because I knew you would come out and do something drastic and I could catch you in the act. And Mr. Longtooth's like, oh, crap.
Well played. Now he's got two guns, it looks like. He's come prepared. Oh,
yeah, now he's got two. That's right. One of them, that's right. He filled them with holy water.
Oh, yeah, squirt guns.
I forgot,
guns.
Yeah, they're squirt guns. Because, yeah, they're squirt guns because Longtooth is like, bullets are no match for me. And he's like, you know, I stopped by the church on the way over. And he starts shooting them with this holy water. And as he is, it's like sparking on them and like burning them. And he's getting them pretty good. It's kind of cool looking. It's like a little shock of lightning.
Practical effects
on him. It's pretty cool. He keeps shooting him because he's like, well, what do you want? And so he wants him to keep getting all the blood he can.
It's just business.
Yeah, just business. And yeah, he's shooting him a lot with that. He's really smoking from all the holy water.
I think that Longtooth's got the point, man. You can stop torturing him now.
Longtooth wants to normally just take out criminals, and he says he's running out, and Crosswhite's like, I don't care what you do, lower your standards. If the person's rude, if they're not doing their taxes, take them all out. And that's not exactly what Longtooth was wanting to do. So he's really shooting them. Yeah, now he's starting to really smoke like a green smoke from all the holy water, and I think Mr. Crosswhite's overdoing it. And so this is where Longtooth is like, okay, fine, I'll do it. And just as he says that, Sally comes out of this other coffin like a mummy.
Oh, the Iron Maiden. She was hiding in the Iron Maiden.
No way.
Somehow. I guess they took the spikes out.
Wait a second. Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, see?
Oh. Yeah, I guess they did.
And actually, I do see a couple spikes in the background. So, I mean, hey, man. She's right. Into that.
Yeah, I guess. You know? She's into something.
I'm not into kink shaming. No, I'm fine.
Well, she was hiding in the Iron Maiden, apparently. Maybe had removable spikes. I don't know.
Yeah.
But she was in there, and she comes out immediately with her purse, and she's in her... And she just comes out like, no, you won't. You won't join him.
I won't kill again!
Then I'll tell the whole world about your little hobby. How long you figure before someone strolls in here while you're dozing the day away and prods your ticker with a grape steak? Time's up, Lugosi. What do you say?
I'll do it.
No, you won't.
Sally, what on earth are you doing here?
When Mr. Crosswhite followed you, I followed him. I was afraid for you.
So she's been hiding too. Apparently, Sally's known for a while that he's a vampire.
You know, everybody knows this guy's a vampire.
Yeah, I'm like, how does everyone just like know he's a vampire? They're just like, oh yeah, I work with a vampire. It's it's just a vampire.
Well, I mean, today, to be fair, like you see that kind of thing, people will be just like, ha ha, they pass it off as a joke.
But they all taken it pretty well. Like they're not like shocked. They're just like, yeah, I already know.
Yeah,
I know you're a vampire. Talk about waiting till the last minute to bring it up, though. You think she'd be like, you don't have to cover your fang boner. You can just, you know, like she can just be like, I know what it is.
Now we can end the awkwardness.
And he's just like, yeah, I'm a vampire. And she's like, of course, I've known for years. 4 years.
4 years.
She has known he was a vampire, and she never said anything. Why wouldn't you just... I don't know why you wouldn't be like, it's all good. It's fine. I guess she didn't want to blow his cover and stuff, but she likes it. She thinks it's sexy that he's a vampire.
I just love the word, the way she says that word.
Sexy.
Yeah, I know. It's like almost like she's like a sin to say
it's
it.
So sexy.
Sexy. It makes you kind of sexy. And she's just like, you know, I'm going to fight for it, but I'm also kind of turned on right now, and what's happening? And Mr. Crosswhite is like, that's hilarious, but me and Sally are going to be together. And Sally's like, what are you talking, like, no,
it's
man.
Like, you, no.
No one wants to be with you. And so he's basically like, if you don't come along with me, Sally, I'm going to hurt Mr. Longtooth. And she's like, you know what, fine. I'll come along with you. I'll be with you, whatever. So Mr. Crosswhite tells Longtooth to get in his coffin and go to sleep. Where is your coffin? And so that's when Longtooth is like, do you want me to show you my coffin? He's like, I have a cool Murphy bed coffin. I mean, that's not what he says, but that's... So he goes over and unhooks the rope. Well, very menacingly walks over and unhooks the rope, because Mr. Crosswhite's not letting him out of his sight with those holy water guns. And he unhooks the rope, and then the coffin slams down and knocks Mr. Crosswhite out because he was right underneath where it was going to come out, which is like, ha ha ha. And immediately, Longtooth is like, I've been wanting to bite this guy
It's happy
long.
Hour. Again, with the allusions to blood being, like, alcoholic. Yeah. Something, like, having the same effect on vampires as alcohol has on humans.
Yeah, because even, in, like you said in the beginning, shaker. With him waking up, though, seeming like he was hungover. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's just, like, a blood
and,
drunk.
And then over the radio, with Van Helsing over the radio saying that it was an addiction.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a play on alcoholism.
It doesn't really put vampires in that glamorous a light.
No.
Is
it glamorous?
That way.
I don't know.
No. Well... I mean, Edward and Sparkles.
But that's not a vampire.
Stuff like that. Hey, now.
You're an all-star.
You can't actually say that, you know, just because something is not my version of a vampire, well, it's not a true vampire. It's like no true Scotsman, no true vampire would do that, right?
Anyway, Mr. Longtooth is excited for happy hour, and his fangs come out, and he goes down immediately. He's like licking, he's all gross. He's like licking it.
Nom.
And he gets ready to go down to bite Mr. Crosswhite, and then they hear a noise. And the cop and Mr. Van Helsing are coming down to check out the place. And he's like, dang it. And so Longtooth's like, okay, open the coffin. We got to hide Mr. Crosswhite. And then we need to hide.
Did they get a warrant?
I don't think they care. Well, maybe they did. I don't know.
I mean, it's a private residence.
Is it? Because it might just be a basement of some place. Like,
I don't know. Maybe it's a condemned house.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty condemned. They're hiding behind this couch in between these, like, chests.
Reading like Van Helsing and four cops.
Van Helsing immediately is like, he sees the rope and he's like, that's where the coffin is. Apparently it's a
he's
pretty,
dealt with this before.
Pretty common thing.
He's found many sleazy urban vampires.
And he immediately goes over and pulls down the coffin, and and the cops are like, oh crap, there's a coffin. And they open it up and Mr. Crosswhite's inside. And so Van Helsing is like, okay, well, there's our vampire. Like, he's not even going to check for fangs. And so he stabs and kills Mr. Crosswhite.
It's a great place to put him, though.
And then just leaves him in the coffin and they just leave. I guess they're going to come back for him later?
Yeah, that didn't make much sense.
They didn't stick around very long to, like, seal up a crime scene or anything. You know, they just was like, okay, cool. And then they, like, left. And I was kind of thinking that Van Helsing would be like, well, how come he didn't burst into dust or something like that? You think that they'd
usually
be like...
Usually they're supposed to either catch on fire or disintegrate.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're of the same mind here.
But he didn't. And so I guess Varyman was just like, that's right. And then he just...
Of course, you know, maybe this Van Helsing guy, he probably just took that name. He might be just some crazy guy who doesn't really know what he's doing even. He might not be a vampire hunter at all. Or, this is just a thing that he's trying to do right now.
Or maybe he stabbed him and then realized what he did and was just like, gotta fake it.
That would be hilarious,
fake it till you make it. Just you have to be imagine, like, all right.
Imagine how many times a vampire hunter has staked a human being.
That was totally our vampire, but he's going to come back later and take care of it. The cops leave, and the detective, the main guy, he's still pretty confused. He's like, what? Is that really a vampire? And so as soon as they leave, which is not really that long, like 2 seconds later, Sally and Longtooth pop out from behind the couch. I love this part so much because I love Sally. Oh, she's so good. And she's back there and she's like, oh, it's so horrible that Mr. Cross, you know, they stabbed him and killed him. And Longtooth's like, yeah, it is. But then she's like, it's so exciting. And then she's basically like working up the courage and she wants him... She wants to become a vampire and be with him forever.
Sally strikes me as the kind of person who's probably read a lot of fantasy and horror and has been just so sick of mundane, everyday life going to work that she's just yearning for an escape from all of that.
Well, and she's known this for a couple years, so maybe she's kind of just been like, you know what, it really does sound enticing. Let's do it. And you find out this is Longtooth's first name is Donald. I love it because her eyes are just like bouncing up and down the whole time like,
would you consider... What I mean is, could you, I mean, I've always wanted to be a creature of the darkness.
You have.
Sally and Donald forever.
Oh, Sal. Have you had dental surgery in the last 72 hours?
This is so sexy.
He gets a mouth boner again with his fangs, and she's rubbing them. She reaches out and rubs them. I'm like, oh my gosh, she rubbed it. And then she just like gives him her neck, and he goes down to bite it. Donald and Sally forever.
Om nom nom.
I was like, yay. And she goes, this is so sexy.
So sexy.
I'm like, you go, Sally. So that's the end of the episode. And it fades, fades over to the Crypt Keeper, and he's got a
classy dame on the slab.
A woman laying there. I guess she's dead. But he's still got his vampire cape on. And
you know, the Crypt Keeper brings all the hotties to his place.
It looks like, I think she has a bite on her neck. Something. So it looks like it's his victim. And he's kind of just bringing out, you know, puns and laughing and making himself laugh about being a vampire. Crypt Keeper, you're so punny. And the best Crypt Keeper pun is...
It's good to see two lovers so batty about each other. Now that's a relationship they can sink their teeth into.
But yeah, so that's the end of the episode there. Donald and Sally forever.
It's fun.
I guess they're going to have to leave.
A love story for the ages.
I mean, I guess they would have to leave and figure out somewhere else to go. I feel like Sally would be down with killing for now, at least for a while. So if anything, she could do it for him.
The quiet, nice ones, man.
Season 3, Episode 7, The Reluctant Vampire. There was no trivia for IMDb this time. The next episode is Season 3, Episode 8, Ezel Killia. I want to thank Mike for coming on again and talking about this fun episode.
It was a joy.
Did you have a good time?
It was my pain. It was my pleasure. It was my ecstasy. It was my all.
It's so horrible.
It was so,
that is so sexy.
It was sexy.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Good Evening Kitties podcast. If you want to email me, you can reach me at goodeveningpod@gmail.com. There's also a Facebook page that you can join, and you can leave a review there. You can leave a review on iTunes. Like, rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. You can find this podcast pretty much anywhere. There's also a Patreon page. I have everything. Oh, thank you so much for listening to the Good Evening Kitties podcast.
I just had quite a scare. I actually thought my heart was beating again.
Greetings, listeners. It is I, D.B. Spitzer, beckoning you closer to the People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. Learn of terrible meetings in lonely places, of cyclopean ruins in which vast staircases lead down to abysses, of knighted secrets, of complex angles that leap through invisible walls to other regions of space and time, and of hideous explorations in remote and forbidden places. This is an exploration of the Cthulhu Mythos, pgttcm.com, darkmyths.org, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever you find your podcasts.